good afternoon, morning, whatever time it is, wherever you are. This is Larson Hicks with the Larson Hicks podcast show. I haven't done this in a long time, so it's good to be back on the channel. And I'm really excited about today. I've been looking forward to this podcast for a couple of weeks. Me and Michael and Santiago have been trying to get this thing scheduled. And then Michael's wife has to go off and have a baby and ruin everything. And so, here we are finally. Congrats, by the way, Michael.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
So if the names on the screen are not familiar to you, I'll do a quick introduction to the guys. Michael Foster is a pastor out in Batavia, Ohio, East River Church. He's also a full-time sales manager, director, executive. What, I don't know how you talk about it, but you are over.
I'm a director.
Okay.
Yeah.
Director. So he at Maddox, where he hires and fires and manages a bunch of salespeople. I don't know exactly how you do what you do, Michael. You're a prolific writer and podcaster and pastor and also a very successful businessman. So kudos to you. I hope someday to have your level of productivity. And then Santiago is an old friend of mine from my days living in Moscow and playing rugby. Santiago and I played rugby together.
You taught me how to play.
Yeah, well, that's true. I was your coach. So I had a phase where I tore my ACL and was too cheap to get it fixed. And so I started coaching during that period, and then eventually got it fixed. So I think that was probably during that time I was doing more coaching than playing. But Santiago and I are both alumni of New St. Andrews College. So that's kind of how we got connected. And Santiago's originally from – your family's from Mexico City, right?
That's right.
Which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
I think most of your crew is now up in Idaho, but you're in Dallas, right?
That's right. I'm in Dallas. We're the sort of self-exiled a bit of the family, and came here to work at New Founding.
So fun realization that Michael and I had. Michael and I talk fairly regularly, just kind of about whatever, and we were talking about this and. We realized that both of us were trying to recruit you to come work at our respective companies. It sounds like at the same time, and we both lost out on you to New Founding. So we're happy for you, and we're happy for New Founding, but we're also a little upset about the fact that you didn't come work for either of us.
Yes, it is. That is a true story.
That's awesome. Well, So Santiago's at New Founding, and the reason we're having this podcast, the topic we want to discuss today, just in very broad strokes, is work and internet and cultural mandate, dominion taking, just I'd maybe like to add masculinity to that topic. We've got the author of It's Good to Be a Man on the call. So of course we should throw that in the mix. But Santiago wrote a really, really cool article, recently that got the attention of Tucker Carlson he was interviewed on that. If you haven't, check out, just Google Santiago Pliego and, Vibe Shift. And you probably will find his Substack where he posted that. Wonderful article, and the interview with Tucker was great, and it resonated with me and I know others. So maybe just to kick things off, you could just give us a little teaser of what the article was about, and then I'd love to just, you know, let's just talk about work and just this topic for a little bit.
Yeah, totally. So the article was sort of written internally at first. I wanted to organize my thoughts around what I and others around me were calling the vibe shift, which was basically the sense that for the last 18 months or so, hard to pin down the exact dates, the things had gotten so nuts. This is the sort of TLDR. Things had gotten so nuts that a lot of people were starting to just opt out, opt out of the craziness, opt out of the bureaucracy.
Yeah.
People that would, particularly young men. And I saw, I wrote about the article from the perspective of an investor. So on New Founding, I lead the venture fund, and I talked to a lot of young men who were building companies, startups, and they want us to invest and whatnot. And so the I realized as I'm talking to these guys, you know, hours every week spent with many, many guys talking about their things they're building over the course of, 18 months,
right,
that the idea of, that we kind of had about, you know, the Silicon Valley entrepreneur, the startup founder in the 2010s, who's sort of kind of a nerdy guy who keeps his head down, tries to be neutral, apolitical, which basically means he's left, you know, very left-leaning,
right,
was very much starting to disappear. And it hasn't gone completely away, but there's this new kind of breed of guys emerging who are Gen Z for the most part, who were explicitly Christian or religious in some way, or interested in, they're not atheists, I'll tell you that much,
right.
They're not materialist atheists,
right.
Who are explicitly pro-America, pro-family values, pro sort of reality, and who are building exciting, cool things, not sort of just, a better calendar app, but they're building new manufacturing companies, or they're building nuclear power plants, or whatever the case may be. And so, but I saw this shift in my work, but it was, as I sort of researched and wrote, I thought that it was sort of representative, microcosm of a broader shift of what's happening culturally,
yeah,
politically, and the opportunities that emerge from this shift in the vibe.
Nice.
What's kind of funny is you said 18 months ago, and I can remember being down in Boca Chica. I was down at Starbase for doing some stuff with SpaceX, and we had an Airbnb, and I was sitting on the back of it. I called up Aaron Wren, and this was January of last year.
Yeah.
And I called him, and I was like, Aaron, the vibe has shifted, right? I remember literally saying that. I was like, something's changed.
Hmm.
And I started noticing it in several different ways. The end of, I guess, see, what is it? 24, 23, the end of 22.
Yeah.
Right. And it's, for me, I think people are just kind of getting exhausted in some of the post-pandemic, kind of the layout was becoming clear.
Right.
Like, all right, this is the new way things are laid out. Now let's take action and do something.
Right.
And for a while, all that was up in the air. Who knew where things were going to go? It was
right.
Like really crazy, especially 2020, 2021. That's funny that you said 18 months. That certainly was my experience
accurate
as well. And just thinking, like, I was watching the Manosphere kind of conversation peter out. I think it, the direction it went with guys like Andrew Tate was kind of like the last thing. And then I think I've also noticed that, I was telling someone about, this. So basically in 2020, if you had something no one else had, no matter how bad you were, you could grow that thing. So for example, at Maddox, we had lots of transformers. We had been buying up inventory for a long time. We had a huge inventory.
Yeah.
We had stateside suppliers. And now you're not able to get your transformers from Korea or China with ease because of shipping container issues, right? And so now we were able to grab up huge amounts of market share as a relatively small company at the time, really quick. If you were riding on biblical manhood in a way that was conversant with red pill ideas, kind of the modern, situation we find ourselves in, suddenly you're rocketed to the top. And that's
right.
What happened to me.
Right.
Right. Or if you've been writing about relationships with civil magistrate in the church for years and years and years, as Doug Wilson, canon, and canon had a lot of that stuff. Suddenly everyone's like, who can guide us through this crazy time? So guys, Canon grew, guys like me grew, Maddox grew, any company that had something that was ready for that moment grew. Mm-hmm. But I noticed towards the end of 2022, certainly the beginning of 2023, that all that was kind of calming down, and you had to get back to like just standard, really good customer service. Like for Take It's Good to Be a Man. Mm-hmm. I would record that whenever I felt like it, in my car or something, like on like some cheap like iPhone stuff, but no one else was doing that.
Right.
So people would listen to my crappy audio. Well, nowadays things are calming down. People are expecting higher quality, you know, audio. If you know, we always gave good customer service at Maddox, but if you couldn't get a transformer and you needed one for your project to get done, people would put up with some pretty crappy customer service because you're just happy to have a transformer.
Right.
And so what I've seen happen is part of the vibes shift is things settling into the beginning of the new order, right? I say the beginning because it's not exactly clear where this all is going to go, but there is a settling that's been happening for the last 18 months or so, maybe a little longer than that.
Yeah. So the way that I understand what you're describing, Santiago, and I think Michael's right that it feels like the beginning of something for sure. Is the way I understood, or sort of filtered what you said through my own head was kind of what Mike was saying, that we sort of live through this apocalyptic time, as I think Wiley or others I've heard say. This time of this kind of where the curtain was kind of pulled back on sort of who's pulling the strings and what kind of character do they have, right? And it was a moment where you couldn't anymore just keep your head down and fly under the radar. It was kind of like a bunch of people woke up to the fact that like it actually matters what kind of character the leadership of this organization has, and I kind of want to know what they're about, and I'm more interested in that than a neutral leader who's just going to kind of go with the flow. And so I think what happened during that COVID era was that leaders were sort of given, for one, I think leaders were given a license to actually start to just be honest and be candid, yeah, about who they are and what they believe and what matters. And you pointed, Santiago, in your article to the biggest example of this being Elon Musk buying Twitter. And I think what we've seen from Elon Musk, you know, is like, you know, 10 years ago, people were criticizing Elon Musk, people on the right. We're criticizing Elon Musk for going along with the left's agenda and for taking a bunch of money from Barack Obama and colluding with the government, et cetera, et cetera. And now he's out there going toe to toe with the left about all of their agendas. And he's very pro, you know, free speech and those kinds of things. So I think the vibe shift you're talking about, Santiago, is like you can't anymore if you're a up and coming, you know, entrepreneur who wants to go, you know, take a run at it. You can't just sort of like position yourself to be politically correct and attractive to big corporate America. You're actually going to have to go solve a real problem, and you're going to have to be real. You know, you're going to have to care about it and do it in a way that's real. Does that sort of get out, yeah, what you were trying to
you touched on a bunch of important things. I'll unpack them sort of one by one. Just initially, you mentioned Michael to talk about this, what happened during COVID. Yeah. I think that was certainly important, just the pressure that people saw. There was this article in the Financial Times released earlier this year called a growing or a new global gender divide is emerging. Mm. We should link show notes. And it showed that this is at a global scale, certainly true in the United States, but at a global scale, Gen Z, young generations of Gen Z boys are increasingly and overwhelmingly self-identifying as conservative. And Gen Z women, young girls, are increasingly and overwhelmingly identifying as liberal. And Twitter, you know, everybody and their mother was talking about this on Twitter and trying to do their takes on why this was the case. And I saw this tweet, some guy said, famous investor, invented Y Combinator, you know, one of the largest incubators in Silicon Valley, billionaire guy. He said, oh, this is a boringly obvious explanation. Young guys just spend more time on playing video games and they're not being sort of domesticated by the woman as much. And I wrote a little thread and I said, absolutely, you know, this is just a symptom of the problem. Like, this is absolutely not the explanation. The shorter the explanation, I wrote a little piece, but the shorter the explanation was, young men, girls think things are weird, but I don't want to offend anyone. Young guys are done pretending. They're done pretending. Yeah. They've grown up in a world where, and so this gets to a point you were saying here, they've grown up in a world where sort of every permanent institution that they thought they could trust has betrayed them or is betraying them, right? I mean, think about things like Harvard or Google recently with the plagiarism scandal or the Google Gemini nonsense. Harvard's like 400 years old, and you think these are permanent things. They're going to be around forever. You know, Google has a market cap of $2 trillion. Oh, you know, Google's never gone anywhere. And all of a sudden, the Harvards of the world, the Googles of the world, and unfortunately in our sphere, you know, in the churches of the world in many cases, are betraying them and teetering, and permanent institutions that seemed all powerful and, you know, that would stand for millennia very much are not. And so young men are having to sort of go back to real things, dig, you know, their entire world is sort of shattered and they're looking for answers. Some, yes, sure enough, they turn to weird and odd places like Andrew Tate, and there's stuff we could say about that. But I think the opportunity and part of the life shift is a lot of young men are not turning to Andrew Tate. They know sort of the state of the world. They also know Andrew Tate is fake and gay, and they're looking for real answers, and they're willing to, and because they're building cool things like, you know, Men Build Brotherhood, when they do hard things together, there's a natural sort of the conditions for young men to ask important questions about the reality and listen thoughtfully and directly is right.
Right.
This kind of gets to Elon Musk, the point you were saying earlier. I think what's interesting about Elon Musk, I mentioned this to somebody recently, we should think about Elon as Nebuchadnezzar or Cyrus. Like those are the times we're in. And a lot of Christians still get really upset with him about, you know, the fact that like, oh, when is he going to, you know, when is he going to say that he loves the Westminster Confession? Right. Until he does that, he's a transhumanist. I'm never talking to Elon. He's bad.
Right.
But if you think about him as a Nebuchadnezzar or a Cyrus, like these are the kinds of statesmen in an exilic period that create the conditions for the revival of Christendom, right? And in many cases, they end up at worst, acknowledging the existence of the real God, and then at best, they convert. Elon is very much that kind of archetypal king, the sort of pagan king who still is creating the conditions necessary for guys like us to go and build great things. The other thing is he's also sort of the representative of just sort of the masculine instinct and the masculine aspect of the life shift.
Right.
He's a great man. I think there's just no denying that. He's an absolutely great man who is making big moves and has a vision for a civilizational vision that is measured in centuries. Contrast that with sort of your bureaucrat at McKinsey who's just telling you how to optimize your business and knows nothing about the world. And young men are just instinctively, it doesn't matter if it's Elon today or Alexander the Great in Macedonia, 300 BC, like these are the guys that young men will look to over the bureaucrats and the censors and the people who are saying, no, you cannot build this thing. And also women can be men.
Right.
Anyway.
Well, I think the problem, Sant, is that Christian young men aren't looking at Elon because of what you described. You know, there's this sort of, I've heard Michael, I've heard you refer to this as like listism. You know, it's like people who, like, I'm not going to listen to or talk to or attend a church or read a book by someone unless they check all my boxes of perfect, you know, they have perfect theology, they have perfect stances on all these things. And so you end up with guys listening to these really obscure, radical people, you know, who check all their boxes, but aren't actually doing anything of any significant value in the world, right? And so those people, of course, and I know you guys have all read David Bahnsen's new book, Full Time, and I know, Michael, you've talked to him recently. I had him on our show recently, too. Yeah, I mean, wonderful stuff. He talks about pastors who have this kind of incentive or motivation to sort of preach that the most important thing that you can do with your life is your sort of devotional and worship life. And of course a pastor would say that, right? Potentially it's like the most important thing in your life is the stuff that I can give you, and not work, which there's also the perverse incentive of, I don't want anybody thinking that like working really hard is important because I don't want to have to work really hard. So I'm not going to preach that our congregation should work really hard because then they might notice that I'm a slacker and I take lots and lots of time off work and I'm only working a few hours a week. So I'll stop there because I feel like that opens up a whole lot of other stuff.
So one thing that, when I was down there at SpaceX,
yeah.
So we went down there and they walked us around,
right?
And it was like crazy. Walked right up to one of the spaceships, touched it.
That's cool.
And it looked like where they make the robots in Pacific Rim, if you saw that movie. It's just like in this huge dock and everyone's working on it. So before we go into these buildings, they walk us into a storage container. Open this door and it's a Starbucks on the inside. It's like insane, right? It's crazy. And there's like three buttons, like $1, $2, $3, something like that. And everything costs $1, $2, $3. You grab it on the way out, you touch it, and it just comes out of your account or something, right? So I got a like a low carb monster because I was tired. So I grabbed that, and then we go into this room, and they're making the containers that they put the propane gas in because they're using propane to fuel these things because propane is in the atmosphere of Mars and they're going to be, that's how they're going to get back. So you don't need enough propane to get back, just to get there, harvest propane from the atmosphere, then come back home. So they're making these containers and it's all these like Mexicans, right? And they're listening to like really crazy mariachi music. It's like, you know, they're all smiling and working really hard. And so then, you know, the electrical engineer shows us around. Then we go to the next room, and there's a dude that's he's like in front of these multiple computer screens, and he's got what's the guys that did the soundtrack to Tron Legacy? Daft Punk. Daft Punk remix. It's like it's going, like there's all these lights and stuff, and he's making the Starlink satellites, and they're like in a pile, right? So what I noticed as I went from place to place to place,
right,
is everyone was working really hard. They all were really happy.
Yeah.
And there was a strange lack of bombasticness,
yeah,
like bragging.
Right.
Everyone was just excited about their work, yeah, right?
They weren't like putting on a show.
No. And the branding is minimal.
Right.
Almost no branding anywhere.
Right.
Like it's wild.
Right.
Like when I've been to something like Facebook or Google, there's branding everywhere, but the branding was very minimal. So me and a VP of sales, we get out and I say, dude, I think we're going to Mars. He's like, I think you're right. So
yeah,
one of my big takeaways from that experience is that people are bought into the vision.
Yeah.
They are. They're excited. Yeah. They're excited to be part of something big. And my thoughts is that guys like Elon actually have a positive vision for the future. And people are like, okay, we're in the rubbles, whatever. We actually want to build something. You know, there's that meme for a while. This is what they took from you. This is what they took from you. If that propels you into the future of building something, awesome.
Yeah.
But after a while, being depressed and talking about how you've been screwed over and how the boomers messed everything up and whatever, after a while, regardless of what's true.
Yeah.
You want to do something.
Yeah.
And I think the younger generations are looking for a positive vision. And that's why, like, I really try to focus on in my teachings in ministry on what you can do. Control the controllables. Like, take ground. If we can't take the nation, at least take a county, right? If you, what can you do, man? And if, what's wild is guys are doing awesome things. Mm-hmm. They're doing really exciting stuff. And so I think part of the vibe, a shift, is a sort of qualified optimism and willingness to build things after a very dark period.
Right. Well, it's interesting. You tell that story, and in 2019, I went to a huge, massive show for, I'm in the healthcare industry, in emergency medicine in particular. And I went to this huge emergency medicine show that I go to every year. And these companies that staff that employ physicians, ER doctors all over the country, they usually, you know, host a lot of parties and there's a lot of stuff going on. Well, one of the companies, I kid you not, you guys have been to San Diego. You're familiar with the Gas Lamp District, right? Across from like the conference, convention center. This company, I kid you not, rented out like several blocks of the Gas Lamp District, taped it off. You could only get in with your badge from the show. And every restaurant you could go into and just grab a drink, grab food. There were several stages with live performers. There were like magicians walking around entertaining people. And it was like this moment where I was like, this is not going to play well. Like they have miscalculated. And it's totally burned them. And the whole, I mean, I think this was the beginning of the end of an era. I think, again, it's kind of vibe shift where that used to work. Like there was a time when it was like, like Michael was saying, like lots of branding, lots of hype, like you sell the fact that you're huge and that you can do anything. And you're part of the club, the insider club with a huge company. And it was like, from that day forward, that conference, like I've heard actually that this year, this is several years later, this year, they're requiring all of those kinds of companies to be relegated to a small section in the back of the exhibit hall. And they're going to limit the size of their booths. Like they can't do big booths anymore because there's been such a backlash from doctors who are like, why don't you just pay me better? Instead of throwing these multi-million dollar parties, and so I think that's another. So I think consumers and employees, like you're talking, we're talking about entrepreneurs and guys that are, you know, being inspired to go just solve problems. But there's also the consumer and employee side of it where it's like, I don't want to go work for some company where all my money is just going towards maintaining this fake, you know, facade of grandeur or whatever. I just want to go be a part of like a down to earth group of people who are trying to get stuff done.
I think what was key there, the larger version of that event, in recent memory that propelled this forward is the Bud Light fiasco.
Yeah.
Which was basically this at writ large in some ways, where, you know, you realize that this brand that seemingly, and it's all marketing of course, but seemingly sort of shared your values for, all these years.
Right.
Not just as like misaligned, you know, by a couple of inches on what you believe and they believe, but they have a diametrically opposed vision of the world than you do, and they actually hate you,
right.
And they hate the people that make them money, and the beauty of that was, you know, the mass sort of boycotting of it, the fact that the sales numbers are reported. You could track essentially sales numbers on a daily basis as opposed to a quarterly earnings. So it gave like immediate feedback to
right.
the boycotts to get a sense of, okay, this is working. Let's keep applying pressure.
Right.
Get a very tight feedback loop with reality in that way.
Right.
which is a big theme in the Vive Shift,
right.
Is what's real. Like, you know, what do you, how do you know what you're doing? Is working or not, and then quickly change your strategy. And yeah, the Butt Life fiasco was certainly that way. Yeah, and you see that sort of, Michael hinted at it. Companies used to be like, you know, bring your whole self to work. You go in, there's like bright colors everywhere, rounded corners.
Right.
You know, they feed you three or four meals a day, right. And you know, give you therapy if you tend to be, if you say you're neurodivergent or whatever. Like, all that stuff is still in many. It's still, yeah. Don't get me wrong, a ton of companies still do,
right.
This, but the better ones, the best ones, are done with that nonsense.
Right.
And there's just, you put it well, Larson, like there's a sense of ground in this. Like, serious people want to work in serious places,
right.
And aim for a mission.
Right.
That's not, you know, group therapy, right. But it's like, let's get humans to Mars. Mm-hmm.
So I kind of want to shift the conversation. I think it's still in the same realm that we're talking in, but the problem that I'm seeing in my own community, and I see kind of in a broader, you know, circle that I'm in, is this subset of men, young men, probably, you know, earlier in their careers, but you know, I'm thinking like 40 and younger. Okay. So that's a pretty, I guess, middle age to young men, who are looking for purpose and looking for meaning in their life. They're interested in changing the culture. I think on paper, they're very interested in changing the culture, but in their minds, the way to get there is to get on the internet, to get on Twitter, engage in all these provocative, you know, controversial conversations on the internet. They, for what I can tell from the guys that I personally know, that are heavily engaged in stuff, I don't know anything about what they're doing in their professional life. I've never heard anything about what they're doing in their professional life. I don't know if they're good at their jobs. I kind of assume they're not because of the amount of time they spend online, but I don't know, right? And it doesn't seem that they actually care at all about their job. Like, if I see them at church, we're never talking about the problems that they're solving in their job, the works that they're doing. And I think David Bonson is fighting against this and trying to say, actually, your work is kind of like the most important thing in your life. You should care very deeply about it. But how do we, like, I think that's part of the Vibe Shift that Santiago is talking about. I think is a movement of people and particularly men towards making an actual impact on the world through their 9-to-5 job. But can we talk about this? Do you guys see the same problem from where you're sitting?
Oh yeah, oh yeah. I mean, I'll just say a couple things, and part of the problem from a male standpoint is a lot of guys don't have brotherhood.
Yeah,
and they found something like a brotherhood online.
Yeah.
And a kinship with other guys that see the same things that they're seeing.
Right.
And they kind of egg each other on, and it's good. It's good to have other people tell you you're not crazy and the things that you're seeing are real and whatever.
Right.
And that was helpful in a age of mass gaslighting, right, that we've come out of.
Yeah.
Now, though, it's almost like they can't turn it off, and they haven't been able to drag that supplemental brotherhood into the real world of brotherhood. And where you experience brotherhood the most is at work, because men and women bond over work, but men especially when there's a mission.
Yeah.
But men and women. And so work is where you experience that greater brotherhood, and that's why you want to find a job that's satisfying. Mm-hmm. But these guys right now, they can feel potent and powerful online without doing a lot of hard stuff, and people can tell them they're really a big deal.
Right.
We're at work, and I've also found kind of the Instagram culture. It's like, if you don't get paid $100,000 right out the gate, then it's a cheap job. You shouldn't work there, and we'll never own houses. And there's all the boom, like, catastrophizes. It's like pretty wild how quick it goes. But, you know, go to a place and work your way up. Maybe it's not going to be like where you could spend 10, 15, 20, 25 years at the same company. But I'll tell you, I'm looking for people that have like spent 3 to 5 years somewhere consistently. Yeah. You know, if you want me to hire you, right. There's some exceptions, but because that's what I want out of people. But the thing is, you can go pretty far, like in 3 to 5 years at most companies, because most people won't put in the extra effort, and you will once they realize how valuable you are, they'll keep you. And if not, at least you built your resume, you can go somewhere else. But those guys, that's hard. That requires discipline. It's not the easy dominion, the easy potency of the internet, right? So kind of like how porn undercuts a man's need and desire to woo his wife or prepare a sort of environment that favors them being intimate together. Mm-hmm. Porn can do that. So can like being a big deal online. Yeah. It doesn't really take much for some of these guys to feel like they're a big deal. It's kind of funny.
Right.
That can get in the way of like building something really awesome, you know, whether it's like working on your property. Like yesterday, I had the dingo out there and doing repairs on my property, and that was like very satisfying. I put in like 19,000 steps yesterday. Yeah. My feet hurt so bad. But but I love building the company I'm with. It's super exciting, super satisfying. And my closest friends are the men on my elders board at church and the guys that I work with on the leadership team and my sales staff. I love those guys, man.
Yeah.
And they're missing out on that. So I'm seeing it.
That's a good
word.
And I
just think it makes them feel potent online. And I'll tell you what, that's cheap. No, those people don't care about you. So when you start to get potent in real life, especially at work, those people will care about you and it'll be way more satisfying.
For sure. It's a good word.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I have a lot of thoughts on this. I'm extremely pro Twitter, and putting stuff online, using online tools, particularly, I guess, because a lot of Christians think of Twitter entirely as Christian Twitter, which is a cesspool of people fighting over minutiae, just nonsense. So I use Twitter a lot. I spent less than 1% of my time on Christian Twitter because it's just pointless. The best way to use Twitter and online stuff is to talk about what you're building. And so that requires you to be building something, right? It requires you to be doing things, talking to guys, etc. Right. A lot of guys just go there and talk about talk, which there's sort of a immediate homogenizing feature about on the online discourse that if Michael goes on and talks about something, and then another guy says something in a similar discussion, you don't immediately know, oh, Michael's building this company as a farm, all this stuff, and the other guy. Maybe doesn't, especially if the other guy has twice as many followers as Michael, let's say. This is just purely an example here. But then over time, this is just how reality works. Like Michael is just a more credible person and he's building real things. And it's sort of somebody once called Twitter, I think it was a friend of mine who's a founder of a large company, called it like it's the exhaust vent of sorts. Like you're working and producing all this stuff and then Twitter, your online activity should just be sort of the leftovers. You're like refining your thoughts or putting out stuff that are the residual efforts of all these other stuff, all these other things that you're building out. A lot of Christians, and this gets to kind of our tribe, Christians really, we're people of word. We like to think and talk, and especially Reformed Protestants within the CRC tradition. And but a lot of these guys and I'm going to generalize here, but a lot of these guys, they lead very uninspiring, unproductive lives. Mm-hmm. And when they go online and they can, kind of show off the depth of their knowledge of obscure Protestants in the 16th century or whatever, that's kind of all they've got. They're not building anything amazing. They don't, are taking risk. They're not inspiring to their own children. They're not doing hard things with guys in their own communities. All they can sort of do is flex that they have obscure knowledge, the rare Pokemon cards, as it were.
Right. Well, they don't even have, I mean, a lot of those guys don't even have mastery at all in those, even those areas they're trying to flex. It's like they've got the brotherhood that they're trying to impress. And they know that if I retweet or reshare this thing that someone, the alpha guy in our sort of online brotherhood shared, then I'm going to get, you know, likes. It's going to be controversial. That's going to prove that I'm, you know, embattled and I'm in the trenches or whatever. And it's like, have you even read that book? Bro, it's like, no, I've never even read the book. Like, what are you doing? Like, why are you, like, who are you trying to impress? You know, Michael, you wrote a whole book on masculinity, and I get this is a debate I got into, not really a debate I got into. This is just a stupid comment that somebody forwarded to me from within our community, just about like the definition of masculinity, and I know that that's not like a thing that. I think it's probably dumb to act like that's a thing that can even be defined like exhaustively, right? But there's the guys who want to talk about your, okay, we're in a cultural battle outside of the church, right? The culture is confused about gender. The culture is confused about sexuality. I get that. And there's a need for prophets to speak prophetically to the world about these things that they're very confused about. The problem I'm seeing is that within our own little community that has no confusion about any of these things, that people are still trying to fight that battle inside the church where everybody agrees 100% on those big issues. And they think, no, we got to keep pushing, got to push this thing as far as we can. And now we want to fight. We want to talk about how being masculine, to be masculine, you have to have masculine features. You've got to have a beard. You've got to be large. You've got to be really powerful physically. You've got to be able to do violence. And like, I would agree that those are all very masculine things. And it would be unmasculine for a woman to be all of those things, right? She shouldn't have a beard and she shouldn't be like an awesome, you know, whatever. The point is like that it's like there's this reduction, you know, to masculinity is just fighting and violence. And the fact that these men are aggressively arguing and doing war online on these issues, and they're so incompetent in the real world, like they're so impotent in the real world, it seems lost on them, you know? And I'm like, I want to shake the, grab them by the shoulders and shake them like, wait, wake up, man. Like, you're not masculine, you know, and that stuff doesn't de facto make you masculine. Being competent makes you masculine, you know, having responsibility is masculine. Like, look around at the guys who are those things.
I think it's important also just for anyone that's listening to know that what your reason you're talking the way you are, and this would be true of me as well, is that we have like lots of people in mind that we know in the real world and we know their social media accounts.
Right.
So the assumption isn't just if you're out there fighting for this truth, that means you are really have fragile masculinity and you really suck at life or something like that. Right. That's, which is kind of always a feminist sort of retort, you know? but there are a whole lot of guys out there that are doing this stuff that are not doing much in the real world in any sense of mastery for certain. I guess to your question, which was a difficult one, it had many layers to it.
Sorry.
But to what I would say with a lot of these guys is that you have to be a person that makes distinction. So take, for example, people were using tone to silence folks for a long time.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I agree with what you say. I just don't like the tone you say it in, which is almost always a lie.
Yeah.
It's actually, I disagree with what you're saying, but I don't want to straight up argue against it. So I want to use tone policing to silence you.
Yeah.
But tone does matter. People act like, you know, soft answer or gentle answer turns away wrath.
Yeah, for sure.
You don't stir it up. And to the guys, if I talk to them nasty, like I get all these guys that are like macho guys, and when I turn the heat up on them, then they get like real offended. I thought tone didn't matter. So part of our problem is that we've become monotonal, right? And this is because androgyny is kind of this larger principle that's in the water that removes distinction and removes hierarchy and all that. So, for example, the internet, one of the powers of it is that it does remove layers in a way.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it gets you to people closer, quicker.
Right.
That's good if the rest of society is maintaining a proper social order,
right?
Where there's like honor towards people of an older age, or like men don't talk to women the same way. Like my wife would never. My wife hasn't done blog or won't do podcasts because she doesn't. She only do it if she does it with me.
Yeah,
because she doesn't want to be a theology teacher, and she certainly doesn't want to go online and argue with men.
Right.
She thinks it's like very unbecoming of a woman to argue with men. And I agree with her. I'm glad she doesn't.
Right.
But there's a loss of distinction, right?
Yeah.
Older, younger, male, female, you know, hierarchy. There's also a battlefield in boardroom, right? Yeah. Generally, you don't use hyperbole in boardrooms.
Right.
Boardrooms are – that's a place of precision and strategy. Where battlefield, precision and strategy have already been decided previous, and now you're motivating people through hyperbole to go forth, right? Storm the gates of hell, men, right? You know, all that sort of stuff. And so what you see is these guys who don't understand distinctions. They have one voice, they have one tool, they have one modus operandi, and they haven't learned discretion or wisdom, because that comes through experience, right? You will not be wise, and wisdom is knowing which tool to use for which job, which voice to use for which person. And so when you're amongst friends, you need to change your rhetoric. And that's not being hypocritical, that's rightly order. Acknowledging that there is a cosmos, an order to all of creation, to all relationships. And so what's so fascinating to me is that a lot of these guys are all about getting male authority back, right? Cool, we need that. We need father rule to return. But everything about their life demonstrates that they don't even understand the nature of hierarchy, and they want the benefits of it for themselves, but none of the responsibility. And so they're just like feminists, right? Feminists want all the benefits of being men and none of the responsibilities, right? And they want all the benefits of being a woman too, you know? And they don't even want the responsibilities of being a woman anymore.
Yeah.
But these guys, I looked in, I'm like, you guys kind of function just like those people. So I think
that's good.
Trying to help restore a biblical social order. Part of the thing is, like, think of OK Boomer, which people have said to me. I'm like, I'm not a boomer. But boomer's a spirit that I say to anyone that makes me feel bad.
Right.
But think about OK Boomer. I'm going to show older people deference.
Right.
Because it honors God.
Yeah.
Now, there's no worse fool than an old fool. Right.
Sure.
That's a foolishness that's of a old vintage.
Yeah.
But if I don't start doing that, when will people start doing that? I have to be the first one to do that. Even Calvin, in his commentary on 1 Timothy 5, it's 1 Timothy 5, verse 1. He says the reason you are not to rebuke an older man like you would a peer is because you'll lose him. Right. It's not because he's honorable. It's because he's older. And he'll be offended that a younger man talked to him that way. And so the point is, you don't win an argument if you lose the person, but people aren't trying to win. It's a cathartic release of emotion.
Yeah.
Right. That's what you see. Is some of us are like, okay, you go be with your emotions. I'm just looking for people that want to do stuff, that want to build things and make stuff. So once you start building stuff, making stuff, you're like, this is so much better than you and your emotions and talking about how the man screwed you over.
Right.
Sorry, a long winding answer for a long winding question.
Hey, that was lovely. I've got like 1,000 thoughts on it, but I want to give Santiago the floor.
Yeah, I Michael just said something that I learned from him, and you and I, Michael, were talking about this recently, which was, it's good to win an argument, but it's better to win the person.
Yeah.
It's really hard to win the person, especially in the context of men, because again, how men relate and how we organize around reality is our building and our taking dominion. And so if you want to win another guy over, essentially start to build a proto brotherhood or an early innings of a brotherhood with him, a brotherhood relationship with him, you have to be doing something that he wants to be a part of, or he has to be doing something you want to be a part of. If you're just talking, at each other, screaming at each other, it's very hard for men to win each other over just by doing that. Counterproductive. I think of even, all of us know this sort of instinctively. It's kind of crazy that a lot of guys, again, in Christian circles, just don't get this. But we talked at the beginning, Larson, how you taught me how to play rugby back in Moscow. And I've talked to guys who were on that team and played rugby throughout and coached, and I went on to coach myself and all that. And for the most part, I think pretty much every single guy that I play rugby with and who like jumped into the fray and wasn't worried about getting, you know, kicked in the face or getting roughed over on the pitch, where they're solid dudes today.
Yes.
They're still solid. Someone to do
incredible
things in business, some just more normal jobs or anything in between. But there's guys I can count on.
For sure.
Faithful and orthodox, and they sort of, you know, they have a family
for sure,
stuck with their kids and their wife and all this stuff.
Yeah.
There are some guys that were invited to come play, and all these Christians, and who would say, well,
big strong guys too, like guys that are like,
I'm not really today, you know, I don't want to get hurt or whatever. Right. And, for the most part, those are guys that from afar, the guys that played and have stayed in touch since, we've sort of seen them drift in weird ways. And there was a sort of brotherhood and bonding with reality with each other that just happens through hardship that led to then having a base, a platform where you can go and build a
100%
family or orthodoxy or whatever. Whereas if you just had the words buttoned up, but then you didn't do the hard things, you weren't in the mud with the boys, there was less of that connective tissue being built that seemed to those guys irrelevant and in many cases important or a distraction, their studies. And, you know, it's more important that I get good sleep because I have an essay. And that's something that I sort of reflected on since those days, and the connection between the guys that play and the state of their lives and families today. And none of them had it easy. I mean, there's been, you know, sins and confessions and repentance, but for the most part, they're all aiming in the right direction.
Yeah. I've thought about that so frequently, Santiago. I think about it a lot. I've been wanting to start a rugby club here in Huntsville for the same reason. I don't know if it's causal or it's just a correlation, you know, that you sort of attract the men, or if you sort of build the men. I feel like it's a little bit of both. One of my favorite experiences in rugby was a young man who I won't name his name, but you'll know if I said his name, who I was coaching his we had segregated the group into different years in school, and he was clearly the leader in the group of men. Just socially, he was the man that everyone was looking to, and his attitude sucked, and his whole team sucked because of his attitude. And so I just pulled him aside and I said, "Hey, man, do you know that you're the leader of this team?" And he was like, "What are you talking about?" I was like, "You're the leader. You're the guy that everybody here is looking at." And he was like, "Okay." And I was like, "And your attitude sucks. And everyone else and your team sucks because of you." And he was like, "What? Really?" And I was like, "Yeah." I was like, you have a responsibility. I didn't, you know, it's not me. God gave you this responsibility. You just have charisma and you have leadership. It's something that you've been given, and you have an opportunity here to make this team awesome, by leading, and giving 110%. And he was like, I mean, it was an instant. Like he turned around, went back to practice, and just went nuts. And his team was awesome. And they were the youngest class that year, and they went on to win, you know, the like tournament, you know. And it was like, but like, that's one of those opportunities you have in a sports field. You also have it in work, right? If you have a work environment, And this is another comment I've heard before, that the only person in American society that's allowed to speak to men like men anymore is our football coaches. Like, the only people who can say, stop being a lazy girl or whatever, you know, stop being a wuss, you know, stop being lazy, get up and go run until you barf. I don't want to hear your complaints. You get in there, take a hit, give a hit. Like, nobody gets to talk that way to young men, or really to anybody anymore. And I think kind of what you're talking about in this vibe shift, is we're sort of, that's regaining a place, in society and in particular in work environments where people are actually interested in accomplishing things. You realize we have to talk to each other like this. We have to be candid and call people out and celebrate people when they do something really well. But yeah, you know, rugby, was such a profound experience for me. And I've seen it, you know, I have the exact same experience, Santiago. I've got all of the guys I played with, are still brothers, you know, and probably will be forever. And they're all out there getting after it. They actually know. And I'll make one other comment about that. There was one guy on the team whose name you also would remember if I told you, but I don't know if he was playing when you were playing, but is actually very effeminate, like in his affect, like he's got a effeminate vibe. He's got interests that are more artistic and so on and so forth. But this dude showed up to rugby for like 2 or 3 years, was never going to like start, you know I mean? Like he was like the last guy we were going to put in if we absolutely had nobody left. Right. But he showed up and played, and he wasn't trying to like earn some badge of masculinity or whatever. He wasn't trying to be somebody who he wasn't. I'd have to ask him what his motivation was. But he's gone on to crush it as an entrepreneur. And he's totally doing his own thing. He's a very free spirit kind of dude. We hung out last time I was in Idaho. But it's another example. Like, whenever I mention this guy, everyone's always like, that guy played rugby? And I was like, heck yeah, that guy played rugby. And he was great. I loved playing with him, you know? Never would want that guy to be the last man we're hoping to make the tackle, because he's just not going to be the guy probably that's going to make the tackle. But I love that man. You know, it was very masculine of him to show up and get after it.
Yeah.
Michael, you brought up social order, hierarchy, class, distinction, degree, and it kind of some of those things. I had Joffrey Swade on my podcast a while ago to talk about class and nobility and the law.
Another sucky rugby player, not sucky at because he sucks at it. It just would really suck to try to stop that guy.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
He took over the youth club that I co-helped start.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it sounds like he's only taken it 10 times further than I, yeah. Than I, the guy that winning it then.
He's like in Honey, I Blew Up the Kid, but it's like Honey, I Blew Up the Modern Ernest Hemingway. That's like his vibe. He's like trying to be Ernest Hemingway. He's like this huge Hulk of a man that you have to look up. I look up to, and I'm six. I'm a little over 6'1".
Right.
He's got to be, I don't know what, 6'7".
6'9".
Like, he's huge. Yeah. 6'9". Is that it? He's gigantic.
He's enormous. Yeah. So Joffrey called me after he moved away from Moscow, and when he heard that I had started a Christian men's rugby team, and was like, dude, I have to do the same thing. That's such a cool idea. And so we were called St. Andy's, because NSA at the time didn't want to have an official team. And so he formed St. Andrew's Rugby Football Club in Greer, South Carolina. And so we sort of, from thousands of miles apart, were sort of leading rugby teams and shared this love and passion for the same thing. We also, he started a thing called Beer and Hymns in South Carolina that I thought was brilliant, where they go to pubs, public pubs, and have men just join up and sing. And they'd invite men from other churches. And it was like, we're just going to fellowship with a bunch of guys, and we're going to sing some hymns, and we're going to drink beers. And so I was like, that's a great idea. And so I've been doing Beer and Hymns in Huntsville for the last 10 years. And we've had hundreds of men from, you know, probably 50, 60 different churches around town come to Beer and Hymns. And we usually have about 50 or 60 guys show up and sing in a public pub, you know, and it's kind of a similar thing to rugby. It's definitely not anywhere near as difficult or whatever, but just like people are terrified of like public speaking is like everyone's number one fear. And you add like singing to the mix, and then it's like in a pub, like where there's a bunch of strangers. It's like, hey dude, you want to join a bunch of guys and like sing, you know, in public. So that's been another sort of way to find men, you know, who are like build a brotherhood. That was really why I started it, was I was looking for men that I could be friends with in this town after we moved here. And it's definitely become that. But Michael, I was going to ask about just, there's a desire, I think, you know, men want glory. I think that's built in into humanity, right? Men want glory. That's a good thing. But they try to get glory or influence by what you said, just being cathartic, like just venting on the internet and emoting on the internet. And because whatever they do is gets reactions, they feel like they've done something. But scripture talks about, you know, you see a man who's competent in his work, he's going to stand before kings. And so like the scriptural picture of how you're going to gain influence and an audience with the very highest echelon is just by being excellent, you know, being competent. There's something about, I loved what you said about knowing how to use the different voices for different audiences, because I think this is all tied together. Rigney's stuff about you know, emotional sabotage and that lack of degree. There's on the internet, you know, the social order has collapsed, everything's flat, and like the idea of just knowing, like I think about just manners, you know, like when I was growing up, my older siblings all went to cotillion, you know, which is like a thing I don't know if people do anymore, but you like go to this class and learn manners, and then like they have a formal like dinner and dance, and you have to know like how to behave yourself properly, you know, and eat with the right fork and sit, you know, like you just learn how to interact with people. That used to be something that we prized and aspired to and actually paid money to have our kids learn protocol. And this like flattening, this kind of pioneer spirit of like, you know, it's anyone's game, American dream, anybody can be, you know, rich and famous. And so I'm going to go ahead and try, you know, over here on the internet. I just think it's led to chaos. It's just led to pure emotion and chaos. And I guess what I'm hoping we can together convince listeners to this podcast of is that actually honoring your elders, actually submitting to your authorities, jumping into a team, you know, and taking your place in the rank, whether it's at the bottom or the middle or the top, and then playing that role faithfully and being really, really good at it. Like those are going to be the things that transform you into a pathetic loser into a powerful man.
I mean, it does. I mean, I think of the centurion when Jesus is like, yeah, I'll come heal the guy. He's like, you don't have to come. I'm a man under authority.
Right.
I tell this guy, go do that thing or that thing. And he goes and does it. Right. Yeah. And he's a centurion. So he's not Caesar. He's in the middle somewhere.
Yeah.
And he understands authority because he's under it and he's over it. And if you want to be good at wielding authority, you have to learn how to submit to it. And you, God in time gives you more authority.
Right.
And God gives you what you can handle.
Yeah.
I think about winning the lottery.
Yeah. Yeah. That's great.
And how many people go bankrupt within 5 years? It's like 70%. 100%. Like that.
Yeah.
And one of my favorite stories is one woman won the lottery twice in New Jersey and went bankrupt both times.
So amazing.
I was like, what's the odds of that? That's wild. But the money actually, it's an amplifier. Like good people, God, when he gives them money, they just do more good in the world. I know so many godly rich people. It's crazy. Yeah. A lot of rich people are rich just because they're hard workers, right? And they're smart. But sometimes God gives people a whole lot of money to expose them.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, sure.
And you don't want to have, you don't want to have more than you can take. It's kind of like weightlifting, right? I don't know what algorithm I fell down on Twitter a couple weeks ago, but it was like weightlifting injuries. I was like, dude, how'd I get rid of this stuff? Like guys like trying to squat way more than they're ready for without a spotter.
Right.
Proper.
Right.
I'm like, what are you doing? This is insane. You're going to ruin your knees, man. But, you know, you work your way to it. You don't want more than you can handle.
Yeah.
And so what I tell a guy, like, it's, this is a sort of working your way out.
Right.
Working out so you can actually carry that weight. You right. do things. But you know, the thing is, like, internet, you can fake it, but in real life you can only fake it for so long.
Yeah.
You know, people say fake it till you make it. And I'm like, well, you gotta make it though, right? Like a lot of us got to where we're at by biting off a little more than we can chew.
Sure.
And then stepping it up.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But you
hours.
Actually have yep. to be able to do it.
Absolutely.
Santiago, so you had a thought.
No, yeah, my thought there is 1 Corinthians 13, and I'm borrowing this, well, this is straight in the Bible, but I'm borrowing the recent instantiation of this. I heard it from Nate Wilson. And 1 Corinthians 13, I think 3, talks about, there's this really great section where Paul's saying, you know, all of us, this specifically talking to Christians, all of us are building on the cornerstone. Mm. All of mm-hmm. us. That's Christ. And you, this is the best foundation in the world.
Yeah.
But some of you are building with straw, and some are building with gold, and some are building with, you know, wood, and some are building with silver, and some are building with precious stones. I'm paraphrasing here. But there will, and again, it doesn't matter what you're building with. You're still building on the cornerstone. So that's great. Yeah. But you can still be building on the cornerstone with straw
right.
versus, you know, diamonds or gold
right.
or whatever. And there will come a day, Paul says, you know, that so far so good. There's when it gets sort of uncomfortable for Christians, for Christian guys, is there will come, like, everybody's work will be tested. Mm-hmm. Will be tested by fire.
100%.
And reveal what you've built. Again, still on the cornerstone, but reveal what you've
yep.
built with.
Yep.
And at the end of the day, Paul says, you will still be saved, but some of you saved as through fire, as through pulled out of a fire.
Yeah.
By like by the skin
good.
Of your teeth. And Nate talked about this at the Last Grace Agenda, and it was, I love it. Maybe I'll latch onto it.
It's a great
part of the broader question, but certainly something that in Christian world, I reflect on a lot. I talk to guys,
yep.
Founders a lot about this, and Christians just in general a lot. Part of how Christian guys have swallowed the lies of the Enlightenment
mm-hmm.
is this belief that you know, the Enlightenment essentially has two tenets, two results, insofar as modern culture goes. One is equality above everything else. Everyone's equal.
Mm-hmm.
And second is an emancipation from all unchosen bonds and responsibilities.
Mm-hmm.
The first one is like all of us are equal. The way Christian guys kind of swallow that pill is to say, well, I'm a Christian. I'm pious. That's all that matters. And David Bounson's talked about this. Where Christians will replace competence and mastery with piety and say, well, as long as my heart's in the right place, then it doesn't matter if I go hard or step it up or
right.
become a master
right.
in my discipline. I'm a good, pious Christian guy.
Like
which
family worship.
I mean, we can say, no, stop reading your Bible and stop praying. Like, those are important things. But and this isn't just sort of the manosphere you're talking here. This is 13:3. Paul talking about this specifically, you can still be a faithful Christian building on the cornerstone
yeah.
and built with straw, and you will be burned, torched down
right.
and be saved, but come out of it as through fire.
Right, right.
And so I think my sort of closing thought on this, related to the life shift, related to just Christian men in general, is be competent. Like, back to what Michael was saying earlier, the standard for excellence, for competence, online and elsewhere, is really high now. And you cannot fake true faithfulness,
right.
Competence, especially in groups of men. You can tell who the competent guy is for real, like instinctively. Those guys know this.
Yeah.
You know, one analogy that I found helpful is I had two friends. So if someone's listening and they're saying, how do I become competent? I had two friends that both ran music studios. One still does, and all of you've heard his music before because they use it. He did a lot of music for movie trailers like Happy Feet 2 and a bunch of things like that. But one would listen. He would be like crazy about each track. He'd have to get each track perfect, and then he would put them together. And the other one, he was more about it shaking out in the mix, I think is what I heard him calling it.
Yeah.
So he's like, I don't need to fix that track because you won't be able to hear it when it's mixed together anyway. So it doesn't matter. And a big part of when you're starting a music studio is being able to get a lot done. You charge, you know, you want to get it done as quick as possible because you, you know, it's not by the hour always. It's sometimes just a whole project being begun. So if you get that done in an hour, awesome. It's $500 or whatever. If you get that done, you know, in 20 hours, that's not a good thing at all. So the one friend was like really sort of, you know,
a perfectionist
and the other one wasn't. And so his music studio did not do well. My other friend's music studio has been running they almost started at identical times. And what I tell guys is like, let it shake out in the mix, right? Just like keep working at all these things. Don't get too like build as many skills as you can. Eventually just get really good at things. And like one of my main skills is identifying the right people. I've just always been good at picking people. And you know, I always tell everyone that my spiritual gift is being Nick Fury. I know the mission. I know how to put a team together. And that's like East River. Like East River, my church and your church, what we have in common is certainly we're kind of like really much – we're led by a leadership team,
right?
An elder board that has carried this. And so the success, there's that. So I know – I've got to know what my skills are. You know, I like high tension sort of things. I thrive in that. So you just kind of like just let it all in the mix. Go out there, start getting like try. If you suck, you don't have any real skills right now. It's okay.
Yep.
Apply yourself at work, and you'll start to find where you can actually bring value. And and it'll all shake out in the mix over time.
Yeah.
And I'm super lop. Like I'm like where I'm good, I'm awesome. Where I'm bad, I am horrible.
Right.
And I just hire people or join teams where they need my good skills.
Right.
And they don't, you know, and that's
right.
And you just find it, you know, over time, and then you get to be awesome.
Yeah, exactly.
Very satisfying.
Yeah. You don't, to your point about perfectionism, you don't get bonus points when you get to heaven for having the right theory about what you did, right? It's not like God's like, well, your works were terrible, but you had the right theory, so I'm going to give you some bonus points for that, right? Or like when the fire comes, it's like, I was building with straw, but I had a really good theory about how I was building with straw. It's like, no, it's just straw. Your work sucked, you know? And to Michael's point, like you only get good at things and you only learn yourself, which I think is a huge part of what happens in sports and competition and in work is you try things and you care about winning, right? You try things, like you have to put the effort out and you have to actually care. And if those two things happen, then you are going to learn. Like you are going to come out the other end of the game and go, I need to learn how to tackle lower because I hate that they scored on me because I didn't get low enough when I tackled and the guy ran over me. I hate that. You know, I got to figure that out. If you don't get out there and try, or if you don't care, like that experience is just going to wash over you, you know? The other thing I wanted to mention just in passing, kind of coming back to one of the things you guys said earlier is I don't think I think that I made this comment on Facebook the other day. Like, I don't think Doug Wilson's impact and influence and the reason why he's being interviewed on Tucker Carlson or whatever, I don't think any of that has anything to do with the volume of stuff he does on the internet or how much he debates online or whatever. I think the reason why he's making an impact on the world and the reason why he matters and the reason why people want to hear what he thinks about things is that he has built things. Like, he has built institutions. He has created things that have been a blessing to lots and lots of people. And that's the church, that's Logos, that's ACCS, you know, that's all these actual institutions.
Absolutely. I think he's an example of what I said earlier. Yeah. His online content is sort of the exhaust vent of the work he's really he's doing in real life. Yeah. I think you can agree with this.
And one point on that is that people like your family, right? Santiago has a wonderful family. So your mom and dad end up in Moscow. Moscow attracts builders.
Right.
Because they're doing something.
Right.
They're actually building things. And so when you –
it's like the rugby team.
So it's like builders attract builders.
Yeah. Well, okay. I love this, guys. I feel like we could have this conversation for another 4 or 5 hours, and it'd probably be a lot of fun, at least for the three of us. But we'll wrap it up here. I'd love to maybe do this again sometime because I think we're very like-minded on a lot of things, but we all have a lot of different experiences and to draw on. So thank you guys for coming on the show and for all of your insight and wisdom into this topic. If real quick, you could both kind of give me the best places for folks who are listening, who want to hear more from you or learn more from your perspectives on some of these things, where should they go? Santiago?
So I'm on Twitter at Sants Pliego, S-A-N-T-S, Pliego. And I'm an investor, new founding. That's newfounding.com. If anyone's building real, long shot companies where they're taking enormous bets, talk to me if you need venture capital, or if you want to invest in our fund, if you're an accredited investor, also talk to me. Happy to chat with people.
Cool.
I'm on Twitter. This is Foster. It's where almost all my stuff goes.
Okay.
I definitely in the new year trying to finish. I've got two books that are just hanging over my head, but I really want to focus more on business because I kind of did It's Good to Be a Man for Men.
Yeah.
And the next thing I'm looking to do is help build up pastors through another project, but also help guys build businesses. And one thing that's gone really well out here in East River is the number of entrepreneurs and hard workers we have. So
yeah, that's great.
I'm interested in that stuff. That conversation I had with David Bonson, I was like, I really like what David sees. And I think conversations like this one are more important to have so we can move from deadlifting, which is great, and hunting, which is great, and all that stuff to like making things together, which will be something we can give
Amen.
To our kids and our grandkids.
Amen. Well, it all comes down, I think, and you summed it up really well. It all comes down to the cultural mandate, to be fruitful, to multiply, to take dominion. You don't get those things by flexing on the internet, and you don't get those things by flexing in the gym. You know, you get those things by building and actually going and changing the culture, building culture. So thanks, guys. This was a lot of fun. God bless. And looking forward to next time we get to talk.
God bless.
All right.
Thanks. See you.